Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
Hi, Stephen. Good to be with you all again this week.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
I'm going to one-up you, Kevin. It is great to be with you all this week. Good to be back.
Wouldn't you?
Baylor won by 21 at UT, so it should be a great week for all the Baylor fans. And however, there were a couple of troubling signs there. Off nights by Goodley and Petty. Were those aberrations, or can we expect more of this in the future? Jake, go for it.
I'm going to start off saying with Antoine Goodley, I think it's an aberration for sure. I really believe it is. I think it was just for some reason he had concentration issues, or there were perhaps sunlight in his eyes, and that caused him to drop passes. Once he caught passes, he was good in the open field. It was just a matter of catching passes. And I thought his routes looked better than they did against Iowa State. Bryce Petty, that should be an aberration, but I'm starting to wonder, just how he's going to do against some of the best defenses. Obviously, numbers go down when you play good defense, but I'm going to read off some numbers to you guys and, you know, let you chew on them, basically. They are 54, 58, 50, 56, 63, 56, 67, 68, and 31. That's his completion percentage in the last 10 games after the Oklahoma game of 2013. That's 7 out of 10 times he failed to complete at least 60% of his passes. Yeah. So really, was a 31% against Texas an aberration? For sure. But it wasn't as far from what his recent norm has been as what people think. He started off on fire in the first 6 games of 2013, basically completing like 75% of his passes. Of course, that's going to be hard to maintain, but his numbers have dropped considerably. Yeah. Since the Oklahoma game, and look, he's still a really good quarterback, but I just wonder if he's an elite quarterback. And that word elite is kind of stupid. You hear it a lot in the NFL, but I don't know. I'm starting to have a little doubt about just how incredible he is. I think maybe he does struggle sometimes, and perhaps not making the reads or nervous with throws. But there is a little doubt for me.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you on that, Jake, only because, when you read off those completion percentages, I can remember, I think it was probably after the Oklahoma State game last year when I really started to look at this. And I think it was like a tale of two seasons for Bryce, where he was, high 60s, mid-60s, whatever it was, through the first 7 games. And then the last 5 games, I think that percentage was actually around 53-55%, something like that. And, of course, and you can even include the bowl game percentage against Central Florida. I'm with you on the standpoint that he still has the ability to make plays. There's no doubt about that, because he made a beautiful throw to Goodley in the end zone that really kind of created the separation in the game following the fake punt in Austin. However, I still think that he's going to have to take on this mindset, which I know he really wants to, but he has to take on more of a mindset that he's going to put this team on his back, because that's what championship caliber quarterbacks do. And last year, let's face it, the defense really kind of rounded into form, and the running game really made a big influence or a big impact in the second half of the year. And this will not, and the Texas game is not the one where it's going to where he's going to maybe have some issues. It could be a Norman. It could be this week against TCU, Jake.
I agree. I think you nailed it, is that he has to step up and take this team on his back, because the running game, I thought it was really good against Texas, but it still took, 3.5 quarters for it really to get going. Mm-hmm. He might not have that luxury at Norman, like you said. He might not have that luxury against TCU this week. He has to be better. If Bryce Petty plays a good game last week, it's not 7-0 at halftime. It's probably 21-0 at halftime.
Right.
I think Baylor didn't have a lead simply because the passing game was not working last week. And so, yeah, I agree. He's got to step it up. And so do his receivers.
Yeah, and he missed. And some of his misses too, Jake, were really bad too. I mean, he missed guys that were wide open, and you're going, really? That was the thing that kind of surprised me. Is some guys are, I can remember an out pattern to Goodley where Goodley's got a 1 yard cushion on his defender, and that's nowhere close to being near him.
Yeah,
it's about 2 yards wide of him out of bounds. I'm thinking that's probably in the second quarter when that happened, and. You know, you've got to make all the throws in games like this. Now, that being said, these back-to-back weeks with Texas and TCU, with the exception of what we don't know about Oklahoma yet, but so far, these are going to be two of the most physical defenses that Baylor is going to see all year. The question is, he has to step in and be just as physical and make some throws because he's going to get hit. He's going to get knocked down. He got sacked for the first time. What was it, three times for the first time all year? So those are things that he's going to have to make adjustments to. I don't know if he didn't make very good adjustments because he was finally getting some hits against a really physical Texas team or what it is. But obviously, hopefully, he will realize the game's going to speed up a lot faster now. And it's just one of those things where you've just got to, or he's got to have to pick it up a notch and make the adjustments. And I do think that he will do it against TCU this weekend.
I agree. He does have to do that for sure.
Okay, yeah. I'll give my quick thoughts on it, and then we'll move on. I think that Bryce Petty has all the natural talent in the world. I think he can make all the throws. I think he's perfectly capable of it. The thing that you heard me start saying after the Texas Tech game, when he has a really good game, he comes in and he's talking about what a bad game he played. I think he puts too much pressure on himself. I think that, okay, now, you know, the thing is that even though he had a bad game.
Hey, the podcast started.
Baylor won that game because no turnovers beats four turnovers. And even though didn't make great throws, he was waiting. They had to be more open than they were going to be against Texas for him to make the throw. And so he's going to have to take some chances. And that means he may get some more interceptions, and he's going to have to learn to live with making a bad play every so often. But Baylor won that one because they didn't have any turnovers, and Swoops had two, and then the special teams plays.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Kevin, what was your biggest takeaway about the game?
I kind of touched on it a moment ago. I thought it was such a physical game, and we can talk as much as we want about Texas's offense having its own issues. But I really liked how physical the Baylor defensive line was. I mean, I thought they really controlled the tempo of the game and really, outside of the Texas drive that went 99.5 yards without scoring because of the fumble, I really thought the defensive line and the defense as a whole played a really solid football game. You know, special teams, obviously, we can't say anything without talking about them because of the blocked field goal. And the fact that you got the fake punt by Spencer Roth, in my opinion, the great Spencer Roth, and the fact that they just made two very, very important plays that were either touchdowns or led to touchdowns because, you know, the Roth play really changed the complexion of the game and kind of gave Baylor the chance to exhale on that. So, again, I thought the Baylor physicalness on defense really stood out. On the road on a hot Saturday afternoon, I thought the special teams play was really important. And also a quick shout-out, too, to Bo Blackshear, who was involved in not only the blocked field goal, but also the fumble recovery at the goal line.
Yeah. My takeaway, Stephen, you don't even have to ask me. I'm going to just jump right in. Is that, you know, despite the Texas offense being what it is, something that's a real work in progress, and I don't think we're going to see it worked out this year, but I agree that the defense – was very physical. This is the most physical I've seen Baylor's defense play. I thought Ryan Reed had a nice game for a guy who's been picked on a lot, both on the field and in this podcast. His play at cornerback was encouraging. Xavien Howard was good. He got called for several interference calls.
But I had a problem with. But
I have a problem with that. But look, he's there to make a play. He's right on it. You know, it's not like he's interfering with the guy to prevent a guy from, you know, catching a touchdown pass. It's just the result of that physical play, I think. So Yeah, I'd like to see him cut it out, but those are the kind of penalties I think a coach can almost live with. And then my second takeaway was that this team was probably a little road weary. That's the third road game in a row. It's four straight weeks they haven't been at McLean Stadium because of the bye week. So I think this team is very ready to get home.
Well, my take was that that was the most physical Baylor has played. And, everybody's picking on Charlie Strong right now. He's catching a lot of flack. But, Texas, UCLA now, they've been exposed a little bit, but Texas played UCLA right down to the wire. Now, they got blown out by Brigham Young. They've won their other games. But Texas is going to be a good physical team. And Baylor out-physicaled them. And that was my first takeaway. My second takeaway was that this was a very even game that turned on four plays. And those four plays were the block kick, that fumble that Blackshear recovered sweeps at the end of the first half. That changed the complexion of the game. Roth's fake kick and then Stewart's first interception. Those four plays, Stewart's second interception was more kind of an exclamation point ending the game. But those four plays turned the game around, and that was a game where guys just popped on each other, and they were just hitting each other to see who was going to make mistakes. And Texas made mistakes, and Baylor didn't. And I thought that was a good thing for them. Now, since we're closing out Texas, let's move on to Texas Christian University. And, Jake, this time we'll start with you. What concerns you about the game with TCU?
A lot of things. I think they're an equally physical defense is what Baylor saw from Texas. And actually, in that regard, I think it was a great prep game. You're playing a team that's not as good but very physical on defense, and you're doing it on the road. So, it won't be a shock when Baylor plays TCU on Saturday. But really, it comes down to two things, and it's going to be the passing game on both sides. It's not where it should be for Baylor right now, not where it has been for Baylor. And that's got to change against a team that is good at getting out the quarterback and play some really tight coverage. And on the opposite side, I've been saying all along Trevon Boykin has improved, and I think he really showed it last week against Oklahoma. His passing percentage, now he's throwing for like 65% of his, completing like 65% of his passes. So, he's much improved, and I didn't think he had it in him. So it's been a surprise, and if you're a TCU fan, a very pleasant one. And at TCU, watching them, they take so many shots downfield.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think that more than the Baylor passing game, because I think Petty can return and have a great game, but I'm concerned about how often TCU throws downfield. I saw a graphic, on several drives against Oklahoma, Boykin dropped back. He was back for 2 to 3 seconds, and he was releasing the ball, either on some screens or throwing it downfield. Doesn't give a Baylor defensive line time to get any kind of pressure. So really, it comes down to the passing game on both sides to me is my concern.
Kevin, what about you?
I think it comes down to the speed of TCU's linebackers. That's a pretty experienced crew that they've got there, and how well, if they try to blitz Petty, how much will the running back situation, which is something we'll talk about here in a moment, are those guys going to provide support for Bryce Petty by being able to pick those up? I think, Jake, you made a great point about Trevon Boykin. I think I'm starting to finally get into his corner as far as, in the belief factor of him because of the way he played against Oklahoma last week. But he's always played well against Baylor. And, he made his first start in Waco 2 years ago and threw for about 260 yards and four touchdowns. And then last year when he was playing wide receiver, he threw only one pass, and that was a gadget play touchdown pass. Yeah. And so, and sometimes with guys like that, they just somehow find a way to play well. I think it's just one of those things where you just have to – some guys just play well against other teams for whatever reason. So I think it really comes down to how well Petty can be protected. I also think, too, the other thing is how well Petty plays in this game. And again, I know we talked about it a moment ago, but I think this is a game where Bryce really needs to make an impact because he can't go 7 for whatever it was against Texas last week, because Baylor's not going to win a game like that. They just can't. They can get away with it against a team like Texas, who's very offensively challenged, but TCU is not offensively challenged.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's the same thing that, you know, Patterson always had this reputation as a defensive guru, Briles as an offensive guru. Now Briles has a good defense, TCU has a good offense. So this is going to be a tough game. And the thing about it, too, is that you're sitting here, you're looking at two teams. They played, I think, 109 times. They're tied. How many teams have been playing for over 100 years and are tied in the series?
It's crazy.
And, yeah, and the scary thing is I'm old enough to remember about half those games. The other thing that scares me or that concerns me about this game is that TCU has a thing about Baylor. They play Baylor well. They play well away from the road. Baylor's had one loss in the last 3 years at home, and that was to TCU. And it was a game that Baylor, everybody thought Baylor was going to win.
Yeah, Stephen, there's no doubt, you know, TCU treats Baylor differently. But, you know, last year, Baylor was they were running on fumes at the end of the season because of injuries, just trying to survive, really. Whereas TCU, I mean, they had a bye week before playing Baylor. I think I talked about this on a previous podcast. You know, they had a bye week to prepare, and they knew they weren't going to bowl, so they put a lot of emphasis on beating Baylor. Gary Patterson even said, "This is our bowl game." You know, they threw everything they could at Baylor and still lost. So that to me, that's a good sign for Baylor. And going back to 2012, you know, the last loss, Baylor wasn't like this team is now. I kind of throw out some of the history out the window there. But yeah, there is no doubt TCU gets up for Baylor more than any other team, really. At least from a Baylor perspective, it seems that way.
Yeah, it's a game where, you know, that's what rivals do. They get up for each other. This is the 110th meeting. I think it's the third longest series in college football history. And so, you know, when you get teams like this where the fan bases are pretty spirited about this and how they kind of look at each other and how they look at each other's coaches or whatnot, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. And I think we're going to get a great effort. I mean, look, this game has been filled with some great moments in the last few years. I think about the Robert Griffin come-from-behind victory during his Heisman Trophy season in 2011. Then you think back when Trevon Boykin makes his first start in Waco the following year, right after TCU lost Casey Paulhall and has this ridiculous game that no one sees coming. Then you think about last year's game where Baylor pulls it out because of a late, you know, an interception in the end zone. So that's what rivalries are. That's why this game should be absolutely fun. It's a little bit disappointing that it's not the last game of the season, but still, it's fun to see games like this.
Yeah, I agree. And I was trying to make a point, and you kind of helped me out there, is that they get up for this game, but they can't treat it like they have past games, is kind of what I was getting at, because, you know, they played Oklahoma last week. Great win. They're coming off a high. They got Baylor this week. You got to get up again. Then you got Oklahoma State at home. Then you have a short week for Texas Tech. Then out West Virginia. Then you got Kansas State at home. They don't have a bye week for, I think, 7 weeks from now. So it's not like they can get too hyped up for this game, because it's a long road ahead of them. And you beat Baylor, you still got a lot of important games left. So I think the nature of this game is a little bit different from past ones.
Yeah, the one thing that I've noticed, I've seen a lot of people, and you've got to ask, you know, about the thing after, at the end of last season or at the end of the game last year, you know, when Patterson ran up to Briles and got upset, and then he went back and ran it in his press conference. Yes. I think that's the way that Patterson works. I think that's the way he gets his team up. I think the emotion's real, but I think that's how he gets his emotion. Briles is more of a West Texas will be there kind of guy. Yeah. What I like in this game from Baylor's perspective is that the TCU is, like I said, they played Oklahoma last week. They are coming into Waco. They're coming into McLean Stadium. Those guys are going to be really, really – Baylor's going to be up for this game too.
First Big 12 game two at McLean.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good segue, Stephen. Our next topic was, you know, what's encouraging about Baylor heading into this game. And you as the moderator were going to ask that, but I just did, and I'm going to go ahead and answer my question. They're back at home. It's been a long time. They built this palace on the Brazos and barely have been able to use it. So I think coming home can cure a lot of the ills we've seen. And kind of part and parcel to that is TCU has had one road game. And all apologies to SMU, but that wasn't a road game. You know, it's 45 minutes down the road against a team that's struggling not only on the field but in the stands too.
Hey, have you ever tried to get through the Metroplex at 5 p.m.?
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They can get there, and they were there, and it wasn't a road game. You know, it was a neutral site game, if anything. And then my last thing that's encouraging is that we're seeing with Baylor that if you have a good defense, they can keep you in a game when your offense isn't moving it. And if Baylor had a defense of 2012 or 2011, even if Texas isn't a great offense, they would have had more than 0 points at halftime, and they might have been leading. And so the fact that Baylor has a defense it can fall back on is a very encouraging sign for me.
Yeah, okay, and Jake, one of the things that you mentioned has brought up something that I've been thinking about a lot, and, 5 years ago, you imagine what you would have said about yourself if you'd said 5 years in the future you were going to be threatened about a 21-point win at Austin because Baylor wasn't looking as good as you thought they might.
Yeah, it says a lot about Baylor and Texas. It says a lot about both.
Yeah, Kevin, encouraging thoughts. I think I gave most of mine in the lead-in.
You know, I think that from that perspective that I still think the running game is still going to be one of the important things for this team this year, even though we're probably not going to see that breakaway runner, if you will. Yeah, I think it's just going to be – what I love about Baylor's offense is the fact that it is a grind-out offense. And I think I just saw a stat where Baylor runs the ball percentage-wise more than any team in the country, but over 56%, which is – that's football is not only a field position game, but it's a physical game, and you've got to be able to punch people in the mouth in the A-gaps in order to do what you want to do elsewhere with the deep throws and spread people out with your running game. And I think, you know, I made the distinction, but I'm a little off course here, but that's why Baylor is in this position and why teams like Oregon get picked off consistently, because Oregon hasn't learned its lesson about the A-gaps. Now, moving on to something else, I still think this defense will continue to get better. I know we've got some injuries to discuss here in a moment, but the depth is really important here. The defensive line, I'm going to talk about it from the standpoint that you've got – such depth at the tackles, and you've got so many guys that are in the ability to make plays. It's fun to see guys like Terrell Burt or Ryan Stewart, you know, even Ryan Reed, just grow before your eyes, because I think this unit could be really, really good this year before it's over. It could be a top 25, top 30 defense once the Big 12 schedule is over. That's how good I think this group is.
Okay, and so after the preliminary game between Texas and Oklahoma, the main event of Baylor and TCU, and the winner of this game will be the last undefeated team in the conference and be tied for a share of the Big 12 lead.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to say that, you know, the two smallest schools in the Big 12, the two private schools, are meeting for the Big 12 game of the year right now. That doesn't happen in a lot of big time conferences. So no matter what the feelings are between the schools, it's still pretty neat to see.
Okay, when we come back, we will talk about injuries, recruiting, and a few thoughts on basketball season. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. We talked about it being a physical game. Baylor did not come out of that game unscathed. Jake, what do you know about injuries?
Well, I know first what everybody who follows Baylor knows is that Jamal Palmer, the starting defensive end opposite the massive Sean Oakman, will not play again this year. He's out with the ACL injury. And, 4 years ago, that would have been an enormous blow to the team. It is a tough loss to lose a guy who's, I think, having a really solid year. But Baylor is more prepared to handle that loss than they ever have been. I think, if I'm the coach, which there's no way that would ever happen, but if I was, I would just move Javonte McGee over to defensive end, let him be the starter. I think you still got Bo Blackshear, Andrew Billings, Byron Bonds as a good three-man, and then you throw in, maybe a Suleiman Masumbuko, and you still have a four-person rotation at defensive tackle. So losing McGee from defensive tackle doesn't really hurt you either. So I think Baylor is prepared to handle losing a guy like Palmer, but when you start losing more guys on the defensive line, that's when not many teams can handle multiple injuries in one unit. We saw it with the receivers, four guys out to start the season. Since they've come back, they haven't exactly been fluid. Once you start getting multiple injuries at a position, it does start to add up. And, speaking of that, that's what's happening at running back. Devin Chafin finally came back, and, he's still dinged up with a high ankle sprain. And Johnny Jefferson, from what we know, isn't practicing this week. So, there's a lot of uncertainty with running back. It seems like wide receivers are healthy now, so the injury bug moved over to another skill position. And, Kevin, I don't know what you think or hear, but I think there's a chance we see true freshman Terrence Williams at running back this week if Chafin and Jefferson can't go.
Yeah, I think, well, if one of them doesn't go to go along with Shock, then that really puts it in there. And the Silas Nisita story was fun for 3 weeks, but we're getting into the money time of the year, and I just don't see him coming, being a part of the mixture here. And you're right, Jake. I would suspect that if, if they come to the conclusion by the end of the week, or maybe a game time decision that that either Devin or Johnny can't go, and maybe it's extended. Again, this is all speculative. That maybe they've worked out enough of Terrence Williams to give him some carries to burn the red shirt off. Because once he steps on the field and goes through a play, then the red shirt's gone. So, but we'll just have to wait and see. That was the one position. We talked about this, guys, where the one position on this team where the depth was kind of like, golly, what happens if something happens here? That's the running back spot, because you've really got three, four guys there that you can really say, okay, these are the guys that we're hanging our hats on. Really three if you're looking at Shockwood, Chafin, and Jefferson. And then after that, it's Nisita as well as Terrence Williams. So it's kind of like, okay. As far as defensive end is concerned, to me, the move that would make sense is that you would move Javonte McGee over the other side opposite of Oakman, where you've got 6'5 McGee and 6'9 Oakman bookend defensive ends, which would be a really intriguing look. Or they could just move K.J. Smith up, because K.J. was backing up Jamal Palmer and was having and really came off a pretty good game in Austin. So they could do that. And I think and Art Browse mentioned that the chance of Brian Nance, a guy that everyone's always wondered about because of his knee injury and how he had to go to Hargrave Military Academy up in Virginia before he came to Baylor and all that stuff that everyone liked to see. Is he going to really get into the mix? So the good thing about the defensive end situation, which is, again, really disappointing that they lost Jamal Palmer, but the fact that they've got so many options with which to turn is a really good thing. And one thing I'll mention, too, before tossing it over to you, Stephen, is it was good to see Levi Norwood catch some punts and be involved. I know they wanted to get him involved immediately. you know, he wasn't really sharp, but at the same time, I don't think anyone was expecting him to once he's coming off a joint injury like that. So hopefully he kind of got through the rust against Texas and will be a little bit sharper for TCU.
Well, the first thing I'm thinking of when we were talking about the rotations on the defensive line, I thought, like, should we file a missing persons report on Clemens Valdez? You know,
because
he's a guy that, you know, I think could work back into the mix. And, yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, Bonds and McGee and, you know, Blackshear and Billings have all passed him, but the guy's not a bad defensive tackle, and that gives them more flexibility. On the running back situation, one of the things Browse mentioned in his Monday presser is he said, I thought we had gave Shock too many carries. He carried more than I wanted him to, and because he had like 28 carries. And I had asked Browse about what I'd asked, what I'd mentioned was that Linwood had like a 5.3 average, 148 yards with a long of 13. So that's not like he got like 3 40-yard runs and then got stuffed a bunch of times. Very consistent. And Browse just kind of threw in that Linwood got too many carries. Now, if Jefferson and we know that Chaffin's hurt, Jefferson, not too sure, but I think that Browse would be more likely to burn a red shirt instead of risking having Linwood get overused early, and now you got no choices.
Yeah, because he would like to have his backs balanced, I mean, his carries balanced, and it was completely imbalanced. But I think at that point, too, guys, I think just the way that game was flowing, he needed the running backs are rhythm types of players, and Shock was into a pretty good rhythm, and he was able to pound out and make some tough runs when they needed to. And, you know, it could be, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, where maybe this is what we see from the Texas game moving forward, that Shock is your primary ball carrier and the rest of the carries are divided. I don't know. It's one game and maybe we're overreacting, but I still think if they do the same thing with Shock with TCU with, you know, 20, 25 carries or whatever the case may be, then I think to me that signals that there is a change in the thinking here.
Well, I don't think he can't do that every week for the rest of the season. You might be able to pull that out once or twice, but he can't do it the rest of the season.
No, he can't, but some games mean more than others, and he can do it Saturday. If he's healthy, he can, and I think Baylor would count on him to do it. But, you know, you got a game at West Virginia, and then you got a bye week, so it's not like, you know, and the nature of Chaffin and Jefferson's injuries are such that they should return relatively soon if they don't play Saturday. So, yeah, you can't ride them 7 weeks in a row like that, but they don't have to. I think they can ride them on Saturday if they need to. And, you know, perhaps not have to burn the red shirt of Terrence Williams if Shock can be the guy on Saturday.
Yeah, now, I want to throw out, because I hadn't said anything about Goodley, I think that part of what we were talking about, and one of the things, remember, Texas ran, I don't think I saw them run this line up in the same defensive formation twice in a row, and they bet the house on stopping Baylor's long ball, and they were successful at that. So I think that and also that Goodley and Petty have not been on the same field that much this season. Yeah. But I have never thought Goodley was the long ball guy. I've always thought Goodley was better when he got the shorter passes and then extended. And so I think Goodley's going to come back, and I think Petty's going to come back. And I think Levi Norwood, I think he's going to be fine. I think he just kind of got it in. He just got his first licks in returning.
Jay? Yeah. Well, I thought last point on injuries, and it's kind of a side note, is, you know, Katie Cannon and Davion Hall and even Jay Lee did so well when the other guys were injured. And I know Goodley and Coleman have earned it, but those guys were afterthoughts. You know, you said afterthought earlier. Those guys were afterthoughts Saturday. Cannon had a catch, and, you know, that might have been it for that trio. And so, you know, I don't know. I kind of wonder if, you know, why leave the hot hand? It's kind of like when a backup quarterback starts playing well and the starting quarterback's injured, and then you got the the problem of do I go back to the starter? Obviously, you don't want to sit Goodley and Coleman, but I mean, Cannon has proved that he can run downfield faster than just about any human on this earth. So I wonder why that wasn't in the playbook this past week, and I do wonder if it will be there on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see exactly how much Baylor can open it up, or how much, you know, TCU is going to try and take it away. I thought it was kind of interesting where Gary Patterson was asked in the Big 12 coaches call about will Texas seem to set the blueprint about how, trying to limit or slow down Baylor's offense, and Gary was a little bit miffed, if you will, by that. He goes, well, they do a lot of similar things that we've been doing the last few years, and it was kind of comical to listen to that. But you know, but Patterson does have a history of having some success against Baylor's offense. I mean, you can even go back to last year's game where, what, how many non-offensive touchdowns did Baylor have in that TCU game? What was it, three, Jake? Was that right? Two or three?
It was two pick sixes.
Yeah. So you've got two pick sixes in there, and Baylor scores 41 points. So 27 points, what was it, three? And then there were two field goals in there. But I mean, whatever the math is. But what I'm saying, though, is that Gary does find a way to play that offense far better than a lot of other teams have played it in recent years. And so it will be interesting to see what his approach will be, if he's going to really take – one thing he did say in the call was that you've got to make sure that you stop the running game, and you've got to make sure the ball doesn't go over your head. So my suspicion is that he's going to really attack the A gaps, be physical with Baylor up front to try and take that away from them, and probably feels comfortable, even though that secondary is fairly young, to make sure that they can try and limit the amount of deep balls that Baylor's going to complete on them. Now, TCU got burned a couple times against Oklahoma last week, but I think that would be Gary's approach to this game.
Well, they're very aggressive, which can leave you vulnerable to big plays, because if you don't get pressure, something might open up downfield. Anyway, let's talk about the future, Stephen. What do we got next?
Well, when we come up, when Baylor and TCU line up, there may be a few visitors there. Kevin, I know you've been tracking the visitors that may be coming to McLean. Who do you think
is there? This is going to be I'll tell you what, a lot of great games for kids to come watch teams play. You've got basically, if one of they wanted to do it, they could do a triple header. They could go to the Cotton Bowl, come to McLean, and then maybe go down to College Station if they wanted to, because all those games are spaced. It's a great weekend for football in the state, for sure. But the notable names of the kids that Baylor is going to have here, obviously Dominic D'Souza, the offensive lineman out of City College of San Francisco, is going to be taking his official visit. That seems to be the only official visit that Baylor is going to get this weekend. Now, for game visitors, just to rattle off a couple of them, Chad President, the Temple quarterback, Blake Lynch, the Gilmer athlete, Tony Nicholson, athlete from South Grand Prairie, their latest commitment. Will be there. Jalen Jones, Allen, defensive back. I think that's an important get for them to have him come down there. Hopefully he won't change his mind and run down to the Cotton Bowl. Then you got Jamichael Hasty, the long running back, will be there. Kashawn Somerville from Pflugerville Hendrickson will be there. A couple of the maybes. Looks like Derek King, the athlete from Manville, will be there. Patrick Hudson, the Salisbury offensive lineman, should be there. At least that's everything that we've heard. So those are just a few of the names that will be out there. And then two other local products, Eric Cuffey, the defensive back from Waco High, and Parrish Cobb, the Waco La Vega defensive back. Those are 2016 kids are expected to be there as well. Oh, and then before I forget, Zach Smith from Grandview will be there.
Yeah, and just to jump in, that's a strong list of visitors. But for our subscribers to SickhamSports.com, we have an even longer list online. With guys who are not committed to Baylor, guys who have offers, guys who have interest. So much longer list on SickhamSports.com. So there's the plug for the website.
There you go.
All right, and anything else shaking in terms of commits? What was the story on the kid that said he committed to Baylor but didn't?
Yeah, before you go, Kevin, I just want to bring – I want you to tell a story, but now that's the second time in 3 months that a kid has said he's committed to Baylor when it actually had not happened. And, I point to signs everywhere of how this program is changing. And I'm sure there were no false commits under Guy Morris. So let me just say that guys are not – some guys don't have offers. They think they do, and they want to commit. It's just another sign of where this program is. People want to come play for Arbor Isles. It's impressive. Anyway, yeah, along with the story. I want to hear the story again.
Yeah, the kid's name is Dwight Riley. He's a linebacker out of San Antonio MacArthur, 2016 kid. He's about 6'1", 215. Tweeted out apparently Sunday that he had committed to Baylor, and it started to kind of go viral a little bit. We had checked into it on Tuesday morning and found out that, number one, or three things. One, Baylor knows who he is, and I think they've talked with him a little bit. Two, he doesn't have an offer, so that leads to three. He can't commit if he doesn't have an offer yet. So, and that's fine. I'm sure he's a kid that – and I'll put it to you this way. Up until Tuesday at morning, about 9 o'clock, Dwight Riley wasn't even in the Rivals database. And it looked like when I was checking where the adversaries' websites in terms of their databases for recruits for his name – that his profile looked fairly fresh as well. So that all kind of comes together like this. And so, I'm sure he's a kid that obviously that Baylor is going to track over time, and we'll just see how this scenario plays out over the next several months.
Well, you know, a week after Baylor offers, Oklahoma and Texas will.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Respect for Baylor, though, because if Baylor's identifying talent and Baylor's got the track record that they do against the two, if you will, flagship schools of the Big 12, then Baylor's got their attention.
Okay. Anything else on recruiting, or should we talk about basketball?
Jake is at Jake Lindsey from Utah will be making his official visit. He committed to Baylor over the summer, so he'll be there. Also, there's a chance that King McClure, who's already taken his official visit, the guard at a AAA academy who committed to Baylor back in April, he might be coming down for just to come out and watch the game.
Yeah, that's a good note to add because we're about a month away from the beginning of the early signing period for basketball.
And I'm glad that you said that too, because one other thing, Jake, too, that Baylor, by the time we hit this podcast next week, Baylor will probably know where it stands with Dallas Madison guard Admon Gilder. Gilder's taken an official to Texas A&M this weekend and says that he will be announcing his decision on the 15th of this month. So when we have the podcast, we'll obviously address what decision he made.
Stephen, you bring up basketball. Practice has started for the team, actually for both teams, the women and the men. And so, you know, once the season – or before the season begins – We'll use some time on a podcast to discuss the season a little more in depth, but with practice starting, it is a good time to at least just kind of revisit where this program is right now. Coming off another nice postseason run, this one both unexpected and expected. You know, preseason expectations were high. Team had some down moments and then rebounded. Made it to the Sweet 16 once again, lost to Wisconsin there. So another, you know, coming off another positive season, you'd like to see Baylor do it 2 years in a row now. You know, my initial thoughts on this team is that Kenny Cherry, the senior point guard, you know, had a good debut season, but I think many times during this season he did not take over games like he could. And kind of tried to let everyone else be involved. I'd like to see him be a little more selfish, not just from a shooting perspective, just from handling the ball and running the offense, because I think he might be the best guy on this roster. You know, Rico Gathers has a say, and we might get a lot from Ding Ding or, the JUCO transfer. But I think Cherry really can be the best player on this team, and I think so goes him, so goes the team this year.
Yeah, not only that, I think that he not only can be, I kind of think Jake, for at least for the first month plus, I think he has to be the best player on this team in order to kind of set the tone and get everything moving here for them, because, you know, when you lose so much in your front court like they did, that really hurts. And so, you know, I think – from my perspective on Baylor, they're going to have to see, if guys like Jonathan Motley, if he'll be able to, you know, if the reports of him having so strong an offseason, of course, it's got to translate on the court. But if he's going to really step in and be a part of this thing, that's going to be really important. And then you've got Deng Deng, who's got to move in there quickly and establish himself. Ishmael Wainwright, he's got the broadest shoulders, I think, in college basketball. But can he give you anything beyond? Can he give you some scoring? Can he give you some more rebounding and more physical presence in the block? I think that's something that hopefully that he did. I kind of thought it sometimes too that Wainwright was a little bit too stiff and didn't move very well around the floor.
Yeah, and I thought he was, frankly, I thought he was kind of misused. And, you know, again, I hate to question a coach because they're, you know, Drew's got some skins on the wall no matter what some of his detractors say. But I think the lack of a backup point guard, the fact that you had to have Gary Franklin as a shooting guard run backup point guard, they tried to run Ishmael Wainwright as like a point forward. And like you said, he kind of looked stiff. He just did not look comfortable being a primary ball handler. So I'm hoping his role changes, especially now that you have JUCO transfer. Lester Medford coming in, I think he'll be the primary backup to Kenny Cherry, kind of with an eye of him being the starter next season. So I think Wainwright can be utilized differently. Maybe not as much a scorer, but just a rebounder and a defender, because I think he has the talent to be that. And maybe it'll take some pressure on him. I mean, he just did not look comfortable as a ball handler last year when Cherry was on the bench. And so I'm hoping to see that change. You know, unless somehow over the offseason he's gotten better, but I think he can find a different role. And I like what you said about Jonathan Motley. He's that, you know, redshirt freshman, right, power forward. You know, you don't redshirt many guys in basketball unless they just seem to be projects. There probably wasn't much room for him in the front court last year. So there have been reports about him, you know, being very good in the offseason. And a red shirt, I know, is later, but a red shirt did Corey Jefferson a lot of help. And, you know, you kind of hope that maybe having a year to watch from the bench and go through practices will do the same for Motley.
Yeah. What I've picked up on when talked to Drew, what Drew said is that they lost a lot of height when Isaiah and Corey Jefferson left. And so this is going to be a team. Tareen Prince was saying that he thinks they're going to try to play more full court, stretch it more, and, you know, play less half court. And so I think they're going to try and be a little more versatile. But I also think they're going to be a little bit more physical team because, you know, when you take a look at, like, Rico and some of the other guys in there, those guys are box out monsters. And so I think it's going to be a more physical team. I think it's going to be a faster team. And I also think it's going to fly under the radar a little bit, at least at the first of the season.
I mean, Baylor is not going to be, picked as highly this year because they lost two outstanding guys. And they don't return a four or five star recruit who's a known name. And that's the first time in a while that, you know, Baylor hasn't had a guy coming back that everybody just says he's definitely, definitely going to be a first team All Big 12 guy, if not making a run at All American honors. So it is quieter in that regard. But I like this team a lot. I think it has it does have less hype, like you said, but I think it's a pretty complete team. I love that Baylor now has small forwards who are athletic and fast enough to play like a guard, but big enough to rebound like a forward. I think Royce O'Neal is one of the most underappreciated guys in college basketball because he might only end up with 10 points or whatever, but he's filling up the stat sheet in other ways. I think it's going to be an unselfish team. I think Rico Gathers as a starter could have a big breakout season. I think it's going to be a fun team to watch, a young team develop. I'm really looking forward to this season, and it's kind of, I hate to say it, almost nice in a way to not be expected to finish in the top two or three in the Big 12, because maybe that the lack of those expectations will take some of the pressure off this team. I think the team has had trouble dealing with pressure in the past, but I'm excited about this coming season. even though it is football season. I'm pretty excited to think about this Baylor basketball team.
Yeah, well, one last thing I'll say about them is that I think the schedule, even though it's not real menacing, if you will, that it has a lot of landmines in it. The only one that really looks stands out is that they got to go on the road to a trip against pretty much awful South Carolina, but that's not going to be. I mean, who knows what Frank Martin's team is going to look like out there? Then they've got the game, and they've got Memphis out in Las Vegas again around Thanksgiving week, and then of course they've got the A&M meeting in December at the Farrell Center. But other than that, I think the schedule is perfect for them. They probably will not be ranked in the top 25 preseason polls, both of them, when they come out.
Which no, they won't be.
Yeah, I can't. The other thing I'll just say, too, is I'm really, if his health is right, and he's been battling it all the time since he stepped foot on campus, is Alaric Freeman, who's out for a couple of weeks with a bone bruise in his foot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and last year he didn't play because of a hand injury. And so I really am intrigued by him because, remember, he was the late switch from UCLA after Steve Alford got there.
Oh, yeah, this team has like three or four X factors on it. I mean, there's some variables here. I mean, we mentioned Ding Ding at the top. He's the JUCO transfer from Lee College. He originally came from Australia before that African descent.
Right.
I talked to his head coach and I talked to his assistant coach, and, I mean, they talked about this guy like he was the second coming of Sean Kemp, except he can shoot a jumper. You know, that's some pretty high praise, just because of his athleticism and the strength and the way he plays. I mean, he's an X factor. Freeman, you said, Lester Medford, the transfer, Torian Prince needs, if he can be more consistent. So this is a really intriguing team. Not a single player on this team got a vote for preseason All Conference. So. Like you said, Stephen, running under the radar, and I think Baylor will be fine with that.
Okay, and this is where we normally take a break, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask first, Kevin, make your best pitch for someone to subscribe to SickhamSports.com.
Well, I think if you want to take a look at anything with Baylor recruiting-wise, there's three things. Our Baylor Blitz, which is our Friday staple, it's been that way since February of 2012. It gives you all the updates on what the mainstream recruits are doing and some of the off-the-radar recruits are doing. And I think that's really important. We also give you some evaluation of kids that when we get out during the football season, some kids that we see. We introduce you to some kids that you may not know about. For instance, last week we talked about an offensive lineman out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area who's a 2018 kid that probably not many people know about. So, you know, and I think the other thing to keep in mind is the fact that we just added a former player's perspective in Nick Jean Baptiste, who was, I think, providing some really good insight as to what it means to play on the offense, the defensive lines, and what those game conditions are like. And I know that our fans have really responded to what he's been able to provide in his first couple of entries in the week. So those are a couple of things. And then a couple of other things, too, is that we do provide all video of the post-game press conferences, even the pressers during the season for the football season. And then we also, when the recruiting season is in high gear, we go one-on-one with interviews with a lot of recruits. If it's not at the Rivals Camp Series, we'll get them out at other locations as well.
Excellent. Okay. My pitch is that, hey, you know what? We're interested in sports. We're not a social media site. We don't care what goes on. I mean, we're going to cover stuff that we have to cover, but if you look at the national sites, they're going to talk about two or three players on the team. When you deal with us, you're going to know who the third string tackle is. And you know what? If you're really adamant about your sports, that's the kind of stuff you want. That's my pitch. If you want to know about sports, we're about the sport.
Yeah. Well, I'll make a quick pitch. Y'all both talked about content. I'm going to kind of brag on ourselves. I don't think many sites that are in our niche of recruiting and, you know, doing what we do have guys who are seasoned veterans. Kevin is a longtime journalist. He worked at major newspapers. As a professional as it comes, and anyone in the Rivals Network or whatever our competitors have, Kevin knows about the business and does it as well as anyone. I worked at Texas Football Magazine for 5 years, was in newspapers before that. Stephen is a great photographer, a great videographer. So I think we have professionals who are dedicated to bringing everything that the Baylor fans want to hear. That's our mission, is to bring you the best content available. So I'm really proud of that. I like the fact that all of us are professionals about it, and we're not just fans who want Baylor to do well. We know what we're doing. So that's my pitch, guys.
Okay, and I hope that you enjoyed the fact that you didn't have to hear the same promo we've been using at every break for the last 12 podcasts. And let's go with luck. And, you know, this is the Lucky 13 podcast. And now we are getting ready to go around the world of college football. And let's start with our national games. And Jake kind of thought we were maybe going national too much, so I didn't include any Big Ten games this week because I know how Kevin is about Big Ten teams.
Well, it's a real personal. You said this is our 13th podcast when you closed out the second segment we just wrapped up. You know, number 13 is really special to me because that's the number I wore in junior high football because of J.J. Joe, the ex-great Baylor quarterback who now does color commentary on the radio for Baylor Sports. So I know 13 has some connotations, but to me it's a great number associated with Baylor. So, yes, on to those national games, Stephen. What do we got? What do we got to look at? There's a lot of, several matchups between ranked teams.
Okay, and I was 56. That was Chuck Howley's number. Okay.
I was 72 when I played tackle, so.
You were a tackle?
Uh-huh. I stopped playing football when I was in, what was it, seventh grade, and I played baseball all the way up through my sophomore year in high school.
So, did you stop growing?
Yeah.
Or were you that size as a seventh grader?
No, I was a middle infielder. I wound up being a middle infielder who couldn't hit, so.
So you got to play for the Rangers?
No, not so much.
Anyway, let's go to the games.
Okay. All right. We have in number two, Auburn, at number three, Mississippi State. Kevin, why don't you throw yours out first?
Oh, man, great game between these two. In the highly decorated, let's bow to the East and the SEC West, even though we're bound to the East. It's really going to be a great game between two top five teams. The game's in Starkville. I'm going to probably go with Mississippi State here, only not because they burned us last week when they beat A&M, but, man, you got to like the way that they're playing right now. I mean, this is not a fluke. This is a really good team. They're very efficient on offense. Dak Prescott, he's about to build. If he beats Auburn this weekend, guys, he's put himself right at the top of the leaderboard for the Heisman Trophy race. It still has a long way to go, but – really like the way that he's playing. Their defense is pretty aggressive. It'll be interesting to see how well they go after Nick Marshall, but I'm going to go with the Bulldogs here.
Okay, Jake.
I was going to let you pick first, Stephen.
Well, I am going to go with Mississippi State just out of pure gratitude for like I say, I went to Texas, I cover Baylor. There's nothing sweeter than Aggie tears. So I'm going with Mississippi State. I think Auburn is a really good team. I don't think there's a flawless team out there this year. And I think Mississippi State, they got them at home. They're going to be flying high. And if they beat Auburn, people are going to have to start paying attention to Mississippi State.
Well, they're already paying attention. If they beat Auburn, they deserve to be ranked number one. I don't care what happens elsewhere in the college football landscape. If you beat LSU, Texas A&M, and Auburn in consecutive games, you deserve to be number one. I wanted to pick Mississippi State, and I actually kind of think they're going to win. I've been impressed with them. But the fact that you two are both picking Mississippi State, and the fact that I lead y'all both in picking standings, makes me think Auburn's going to win. So I'm going to pick Auburn.
All right.
Okay, you're going.
Oh, by the way, just even though we're not going to pick it, but Florida State's at Syracuse, the number one team in the country.
Oh, give me the Cuse. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. In basketball,
you know, I can add this.
No, you can't, because I just picked Syracuse.
No.
Oh man. Well,
I say we hold Jake's pick, but you don't. I have to pick it, Stephen.
I'm good with that.
Y'all need all the help you can get to keep
up. Oh, you're only up by two games. Come on.
I know. That's why I'm saying all this. I'm exaggerating. What's the next game, Steven?
Okay, next we have number 2 Oregon at number 18 UCLA. Number 12 Oregon at number 18 UCLA. And both of these teams have been exposed, I think would be the best word.
Yeah, somewhat exposed. I think both of them are dealing with injuries that are just preventing them from playing at the top of their game. Oregon is missing 3 starting offensive linemen, and it's pretty obvious when Marcus Mariota, who's a very versatile and great running quarterback, is getting sacked pretty frequently. So I think that's what's slowing down Oregon. I like Oregon, though, in this because I've seen UCLA a few times, and even against Arizona State, if you really look at the numbers, I mean, they scored a lot of those points based on crappy turnovers by Arizona State when UCLA destroyed them. That's the game I'm referring to. And special teams plays. And I think a lot of times games can get out of hand based on big plays that aren't really common in games. So I'm not impressed with UCLA at all. I'm going to pick Oregon to win in Los Angeles.
Give me the Ducks. And as much as we've talked about Oregon's offensive line having issues, UCLA's is worse. But Brett Hundley was sacked 10 times by Utah last week, and that guy's laying flat on his back or running for his life week after week.
Yeah.
And I don't know of any UCLA offensive line issues. That's a pretty young unit from what I understand.
Yeah.
But even so, you're 5-6 games into the season and you're giving up 10 sacks to your quarterback to a decent but not dominant Utah team. That says more about your offensive line and potentially who's coaching them than anything else. And it's been that way for the last couple of years for Hundley. And I'm going to go with that just because Oregon's a better team than Utah, and Utah won even though UCLA missed 2 field goals right at the end. But I'm going to go with the Ducks. I'll say this, though. The loser of this game is out of it in terms of trying to get into the Final Four race.
No doubt. They're eliminated for sure.
I really kind of think they're both out of it now.
No.
I'm not going to say that about Oregon yet.
Oregon runs the table. They have a chance.
Well, okay, let me put it this way. The loser of this is out of it, but the winner of this is going to get nailed down the line. I've watched the Dallas Cowboys for 20 years, and the difference between this year's team and last year's team is they now have an offensive line. The problem that you have is, name me one great team that didn't have at least a semi-great offensive line.
Can't think of one.
Yeah, good point. We'll see. We'll see how it all unfolds.
Okay, and I'm going to grab UCLA. I'm going to use the Katy Perry method. I like their jerseys better.
She was great last week, by the way. I loved watching that whole segment.
Well, Steven, you don't know what jerseys Oregon's going to wear, so how can you say you like UCLA's better?
I don't care what Oregon wears. You know, when Baylor went to the different uniforms, they at least look like they got them at the same store. Oregon looked like they grabbed the helmet from one team. They look like they found the jerseys at Goodwill and then got the pants. But it doesn't look like a uniform. It just looks like stuff thrown together.
Steven, that's why I love you on this podcast. You put things in words better than two writers do.
Okay, all right. And so I'm going UCLA. And actually, when I was a kid, after I graduated from UCLA, I almost went to UCLA, but I couldn't find a place to park. After that, we have Ole Miss, number 3, at Texas A&M, number 14. So Ole Miss is going to be invading Aggie land. Kevin, why don't you start us off with this one?
Oh, gosh. I probably would defer to the Aggies at Kyle Field. The Kyle Field game at night with the 90-some-odd thousand on top of you is really not a good – it feels like an ambush for Ole Miss, even though they're coming off a great win against Alabama last week. But I've got to go with the Tide, with the Aggies here, because I'm sure they're going to be pretty motivated about how poorly they played in Starkville last week. Although I will say this, I think teams are starting to figure out Kenny Hill and induce him into becoming a turnover machine. And I think disguising – and I've heard a lot of talk about how teams are really mixing up coverages that are really getting – that are really confusing Kenny. I would not be surprised, even if A&M wins this game, which I think they will, that he turns it over a couple of times.
Yeah, I agree. You said you think A&M will. I don't think that, but I also don't think Ole Miss wins. I don't know. I'll be honest with this one. Texas A&M has not looked the same since that South Carolina game.
No.
I mean, we talked about aberrations at the very beginning of this podcast. I kind of think that game was an aberration. I think you had a Texas game that played on fire and a South Carolina team that walked into the stadium thinking they had the game won. So I don't think Texas A&M was as good as they showed that game. However, I lost three games when we picked last week, and it's because I picked road teams. I've already picked Auburn to win at Mississippi State. I can't pick another road team, so I'm going to pick Texas A&M. And, you know, that's how you know to bet what I pick, because I'm using that kind of rationale. Doesn't make much sense from a betting perspective, but I had to pick the home team. It's risky picking road teams, so I'm going to go with A&M.
I am going to go with Ole Miss.
Hotty toddy.
And a couple of things. Number one, when you said South Carolina has not proven to be that good, you know, and A&M had a really good game with them. They had to go to overtime to beat Arkansas, and I've never been sold on A&M's defense.
I said nobody's sold on it. It's bad.
I mean, I've never been sold on A&M's defense, and they got a little game tape on Kenny Hill now, and you know, and the only question to me is Ole Miss real? Well, you know, they beat Alabama, and that's pretty real. Now, I don't think Bama's as good as they were last year, but you know, you've heard me say several times, you don't see a super team this year. I just don't think there's a super team out there right now, and I think Ole Miss is a good, solid team, and I think that A&M has more flaws than Ole Miss, and I'm going Ole Miss.
You know what, Steven? I'm going to change my pick to Ole Miss, too, because think about it. If Texas A&M beats Lamar University in the season opener, are they a ranked team right now? You know, they're ranked based on beating South Carolina on the road, and you're right. South Carolina has shown to not be a very good team. And so I think a lot of people, I mean, like I said, you know, they had to beat Arkansas in overtime, and they got drilled by Mississippi State. They looked flat against Rice. You know, I now that I think it through, I think they are overrated. College Station's a tough place to play, but Ole Miss, their defense is truly legit.
It's really good. You're right there, Jake.
It's very, very good. I mean, they have the best defensive player in college football in my mind, and Kim Dichie. That guy would beat you know, almost any NFL offensive lineman, frankly. He's really good. So I'm gonna switch to Ole Miss.
Okay, I've got you switched to Ole Miss.
Let me just say this. I'm not gonna change my pick, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. Like I said, there's nothing sweeter than Aggie cheers. But, okay, and now we'll move into the Big 12, and Kansas State has a bye. I'm not sure Kansas State really wants a bye right now. They're starting to get on a little bit of a roll, but they've got one. And so passing over them, we have West Virginia at Texas Tech, and I'll go ahead and start with that one.
Well, please do.
I am taking Hogerson over Kingsbury, and Texas Tech right now is not a good team, and I'm not going to pick on Kingsbury anymore, but Texas Tech has no defense. Webb has not been playing as good as he did last year, and I think West Virginia I think they're a good team. I think they're a good, solid team. And I think West Virginia takes this one, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Two things for me. Tech can't run the ball, and they turn it over a lot. I mean, Davis Webb has already thrown 10 interceptions in his first five games. That's two a game. That's crazy. I'm going to piggyback, and I'm going to go with the Mountaineers here because the fact that you've got a couple things have played into this. You've got Clint Trickett, who's a fifth-year starting quarterback, playing at a really high level. I've talked about this guy before, and you've got Kevin White, who's leading the Big 12 in receiving right now. 48 catches already in the first five games. That's unheard of what he's done to this point. But he's a spectacular wide receiver. The running game's pretty balanced. Rushell Shell, the transfer from Pitt, off to a good start. Their offensive line is maturing. Defense still has some issues to work out, but they aren't as awful as they have been in the last 2 years. So I'm going to go with the Mountaineers on the road. Now, last year, remember 2 years ago, guys, they had that undefeated team that everyone was talking BCS with them, and they went into Lubbock and got whacked. But I don't think that happens here. I think the Mountaineers pick up a big win on the road because I can't see Texas Tech getting itself out of its tailspin because the two things that it does so poorly, turning the ball over and committing a ton of penalties.
I'm going to go with Texas Tech. It's the last time I'm going to pick them in the season unless they win because I think I've lost total faith in them and they might be a dumpster fire right now. But they are at home and I don't think Alabama's as great as people think. They almost gave away a game against Maryland, but I think it's just okay. Yeah, they played Oklahoma tough, but you know, playing on the road is very difficult.
You know, and you can get in trouble for saying things like Alabama's okay to SEC people, Jake. You know that.
Oh, I know, but you know.
I'm saying that tongue in cheek. So.
No, they're a very good team. They're just not. Let's just not say they're what people think of when they think of Alabama. They're not
right.
Unbeatable, obviously. That's been proven. So, yeah, right. I don't know. I think you can get in trouble just going with road teams across the board, even if one's playing better than the other. It's tough to win on the road. This is a long road trip for West Virginia. And Texas Tech, man, this might be their last stand. You know, if they lose this one, their season might be lost. And they really need this one. I think they can kind of recover enough to beat West Virginia.
I said that last week that their season was K-State. And they last three games, guys, I'll let you know about this, 10 turnovers and 30 penalties. That's enough for me.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, when y'all mentioned that before we go to the next pick, y'all just made me think, you know, two teams, TCU and West Virginia, two really pleasant surprises for the Big 12 at quarterback, Trickett and Boykin. Both those guys ended up being a lot more than they looked like they were going to be. And anyway, so now we move on to Texas at number 11, Oklahoma. And Texas surprised Oklahoma last year, but Oklahoma's pretty much owned this series over the last decade.
I'm going to make it short. I think Oklahoma drills them. They are a very angry team right now. And that's what people predicted last year. So obviously something else can happen. But I think they're going to be angry for last week and needing to recover. And, I think they win it a little more comfortably than Baylor did last week at Texas.
Oklahoma wins big, but Trevor Knight has to get going here. He's completing only 54% of his passes. That's not going to win you a Big 12 championship.
Okay, I am also going to go with Oklahoma, and I agree with you because Katy Perry withdrew her flirting with Trevor Knight after the game last week. So we are going to go with Oklahoma across the board. The other thing is I think Texas is playing good defense, but right now they're not a smart team. They're making some bonehead plays, and you can't do that against Baylor, and you sure can't do that against Oklahoma either. All right, our next round. Okay, we have the Toledo. That's the Rockets, right?
That is.
Yeah, the Toledo Rockets. I almost flashed back to MASH and called them the Mud Hens. the Toledo Rockets at the Iowa State Cyclones. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say, Iowa State, you better win this game.
Yeah, Toledo's, you know, they're one of those high-powered offenses out of the MAC, but I'm going to pick Iowa State, too. I think they're a better team than last year and one that can get this win.
I'm going with the Rockets.
Oh, no. No big trouble.
That would be, man, I tell you what, that would be seriously bad for the Big 12.
Yeah.
And I know you can't make a pick based on what's good or bad for the Big 12, but that would be bad if Iowa State
I mean, my problem is that Iowa State cannot score consistently.
They might be able to against Toledo.
Well, and Toledo will probably give up a lot of points, but I don't know. I mean, the Baylor game from a couple weeks ago, guys, did you see athleticism all over that team that made you think that they were going to find a way to win five games this year? I certainly didn't.
Well, yeah. I don't think they're going to find a way to win five games, but I think they're going to find a way to win two, and I think one of them is going to be this Saturday.
All right, I'm going out on a ledge. Go Rockets.
You can make us look foolish. Now, the next one is another one that I think is, I'm guessing, blowout, and I'm guessing we all pick the same team. Oklahoma State at Kansas. Kevin.
Oh, gosh. Do we have to pick this? Okay, yeah. Give me the Cowboys, although this is interesting for them. This is actually their first true road game of the year because they opened the season at AT&T Stadium against Florida State, and they've been on a four-game home stretch before they go back-to-back to KU this weekend and then at TCU next weekend. I'm going to go with them. Dax Garmon seems to have a pretty decent grasp of the offense, younger team getting better, and I'm just going to go ahead and wave my flag as the leader of the Mike Gundy fan club since I've already been accused of that. So,
yeah, Oklahoma State, we'll keep it at that. I don't care if it's their first road game in 50 years. It's Kansas. They're in total disarray.
I'll tell you what, I'm going Oklahoma State, but I think you're going to start seeing Kansas play better. I saw a video right after Charlie Weiss went to Kansas, and I thought it was a parody. I thought it was a joke, but apparently it was legit. He had the team practice rushing the field to celebrate after a field goal. That's not rational, guys. Nothing against Charlie Weiss, that guy, as a head coach, he's a great pro quarterback coach, and I think that's his niche. But anyway, and then we have number 9, TCU, at number 5, Baylor, in the game in this week's Game of the Century.
Jason, I don't want to volunteer first because
all right, I'll do it.
No. Has nothing to do with what y'all are picking. This kind of blindsided me. I forgot when we record these podcasts, we predict the score because I don't know where I am. On Sunday, I was convinced TCU would win because, let's face it, Baylor didn't play its best game, and TCU did against Oklahoma. I'm, I don't know if I'm coming back to earth or what. I don't know. I just, the more and more I think about it, I'm starting to see a Baylor win here. The spread opened at 10.5. I wouldn't bet $20 on Baylor covering that. I think it's going to be a very close game. I think, though, that Baylor has a lot of pride on this team, and I think they know they didn't play their best last week. They're coming home. It's been basically a full college football season since they last played in Waco, or at least it feels like it. Those things are nice, but once you get on the field, it's who the teams are that actually decides the game. And I think Baylor is just such a complete team now, outside of maybe field goal kicking, that even if TCU is as good as I think they are, I think Baylor is still good enough to beat TCU at home. I'm going to pick Baylor. Y'all pick your scores. I got to think about the score, but I'm going to pick Baylor, and then I'll tell my score after y'all pick.
All right, Steven, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to take Baylor 35-28. and you'll notice that that divides evenly, so it doesn't include a field goal. I'm hoping that it doesn't come down to a field goal, because I'd like to see Callahan make some non-pressure kicks before he has to make some pressure kicks. I think that overall, I think Baylor has better talent than TCU overall. I also think Oklahoma had better talent than TCU overall. Patterson needs to get some credit. I know I pick on him. I call him the angry elf. That guy gets everything out of his players. That man is a very good coach. But I think Baylor takes this one. I think the 10.5 spread is optimistic to the point of foolishness. I hope I'm wrong, but I think I am. Kevin?
I'm going to go Baylor, 37-30, which is the same spread. I think there's going to be plays made on both sides just because that's the way college football is being played now. But I think that Baylor finds a way to win will find a way to pull this out. And I think it's going to be one heck of a football game for 3.5 hours. And I think the difference will probably be where Baylor can find it, gets its running game going maybe in the second half. And I think the pressure, and even though we talked about Trevon Boykin, this is going to be the best Baylor pass rush he's going to see. Maybe the best pass rush. That'll be the interesting question for Trevon Boykin. Someone needs to ask him after the Baylor game, or maybe the week after, of what defensive line he thought was better. Because the Baylor-Oklahoma defensive line debate has been going on all year.
Yeah.
So he's going to see these guys back-to-back. So it's going to be interesting to see what he thinks of both of them. But nonetheless, I'm going to say Baylor wins this game because the defensive line makes enough plays, harasses Boykin enough, and I think the running game gets on track in the second half, and they get just enough out of Petty to win this. I don't think he's stellar, but I think he does enough to win the game.
All right. My score is 35, Baylor 35. I can't predict a Baylor field goal. TCU 32. That's 3 touchdowns and 4 field goals. 35-33. I think whereas Baylor doesn't have a kicker, Jaden Oberkrom is a very good one for TCU.
Stop. Yeah.
My guess is Baylor's up 35-30. TCU drives down, kind of stalls, kicks a field goal, hoping to get the ball back. Baylor is able to ice the clock. So not only giving you a score, I'm giving you how the score happens.
Wow.
Baylor 35, TCU 33. If that's what happens, if it's a 3-point game either way, the nation is going to be treated to a good game. And I think the statement is going to be that Big 12 is a much deeper conference than people anticipated, and it's a very good conference. And at some point, you have to start thinking an 11-1 team in the Big 12 is deserving at the playoff almost as much as an 11-1 team in the SEC team is, maybe as much, because this is a good conference. Throw away Kansas and maybe Iowa State. It's 8 pretty good to great teams, and it's about time this conference gets some recognition.
Okay, and I think, unless y'all have any parting thoughts, I think that closes it up for us, and we will see you next week on the Sic'em Sportscast.
All right.
Okay, that was 24. So we are probably at about an hour and 10, including the commercials.
That's good. That's good. We should, we think we can trim it down maybe 5 more minutes, but that's nitpicking. I think that's good.
Very good, guys.
All right. Well, I'm going to let y'all run. I'm still jet lagged from San Diego. And
the Sic'em Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.